Welcome to the Process Industry Informer podcast, where process professionals can learn and share ideas and information.
Welcome to the latest podcast from Process Industry Informer, the leading magazine serving the manufacturing process industries across the UK and Ireland since 1994. I'm your host, David Hull. Today we're speaking with BMEX. BMEX is your trusted partner for collaboration excellence, providing accurate measurements, reliable data, and traceability for safer and in a less uncertain world. BMEX helps improve efficiency, ensure compliance, and increase safety with its comprehensive ecosystem of calibration solutions, from field calibration to workshop calibration, calibration management, and services. For the company's global reach, BMEX products and services are available in over 90 countries. Well, I'm delighted today to be joined by two guests. Well, welcome, Mike.
Hello. How are you doing?
Well, thanks for joining us today, and also welcome to John.
Good morning, David.
Well, thanks, guys, for joining us today. I think the conversation is going to be quite interesting, I think. It's quite a focused conversation about the topic, but I think the angles we're going to take with both of you should make it very, very interesting. I think this one's going to be quite an engaging one. I think the topic that we got today is very interesting. But before we do that, can I come to you first, Mike? What I'd like to do is ask you to sort of introduce yourself, and maybe if you give us a bit more detail on BMEX, and particularly BMEX in the context of this conversation. But first of all, you know, who's Mike?
Yes, hello. Thank you so much, David. Yes, my name is Michael. I have been doing calibration for a while. I always say that in my previous life, I was the guy that was actually doing calibration. So the guy who would take a calibrator, who would take some sort of meter, go out there in the field and actually calibrate, testing and verifications, sort of providing certifications to a variety of different industries. So I was the calibration tech. I was the guy on the tools. And then 11 years ago, we figured out, which was a long time ago, BMEX approached me and said, well, why don't you just come in and just talk to us about your experience as a calibration tech using our kit? And why don't you just come in and join us and be part of our team advising other clients that we have, because BMEX is making very good kit. They are really doing a great job in terms of understanding what's happening and understanding the calibration world in general. But I think at that time we were lacking as a company that sort of technical, practical touch. And that's why I was brought into the team. It was many months ago, but I enjoyed it so much because not only I now have an experience doing the actual thing, you know, calibrating the stuff in the field, but I also helped the guys who are selling it, who are developing products, who are trying to market the products, to understand, okay, what are we actually trying to achieve here, guys? Because the guys in the field wants this. Are we actually providing that? You know, is this the language that we use? Is this how we should solve their problems, etc.? So it's been a very unique sort of situation, very unique role, but yeah, I enjoyed it very much. And now I served as a sort of technical calibration consultant for BMEX. So I help, again, in the evening conversations like today, David, where we going to have lots of good conversations about calibration, what that means, what it is, you know, etc., etc. So yes, I'm trying to help that.
That's super. Thanks for that, Mike. And you, John, who's John? What have you been up to?
Yeah, hi there. So, well, where do I start? Coming up to 9 years now with BMEX. Position today is director of sales, so responsible for the sales side of the business. But also before that, very active in the field, supporting customers commercially and technically across the many industries we cover with our calibration solution, the BMEX ecosystem. So I've had various experiences with BMEX to date, supporting customers from small sites to large projects, from the many different industries, from the high compliance of the pharmaceutical to the standard power energy side, which still obviously has compliance, but different levels. So yeah, good amount of experience, and there's some value to add to Mike's calibration technician experience as well. So
yes, I think it's a good partnership, I think. I think you need both things, don't you? I think calibration is often, it's a component, isn't it? It's absolutely a tool, but often, particularly in the sector that you guys operate in, it's such an important thing to get right, ultimately, because everything else kind of depends on that, doesn't it? So that's kind of what I wanted to ask you sort of first, Mike, is that kind of a truism, that calibration, particularly in the, you know, the kind of sectors that the BMEX are working on, your customer base, is it absolutely a fundamental? You have to get that calibration right, and then kind of everything else wraps around that.
I 100% agree. I think what we think as BMEX is one thing, but also what our customer tells us, it's a different thing, meaning that they are asking for this. Well, you know, we could be selling the best solution in the world. We could be providing the best service in the world, but if people don't want that, it's going to be a problem. But it's actually in BMEX, we see the exact opposite. So people coming to us and saying, okay, we think it's important. We understand that we need to get this right, this calibration thing. How do we do that? Can you help us? Not only with providing products, but also any sort of solutions, anything that is going to take us from start to finish. And it's going to be some pieces put in place right from the beginning, right till the end. And how can you help us, not only with your products, but also with your expertise? So getting that calibration right is very much, as you said, fundamental. It's the same as getting your product quality. It's the same as getting your safety on site right. You know, there's so many things that need to be right on particular sites. If it's chemical, pharmaceutical, power and energy, doesn't really matter. And calibration is definitely part of that vital, you know, five or six different things that you have to get right on site. And that's where we come in. And, you know, it's very interesting because if you would probably type in calibration on Google, calibrators in general, temperature calibration or pressure calibration, you would see loads and loads and loads of companies. You would see loads and loads of products. But what we're actually going to see there is just products. You know, it's just boxes. And then you have to, you know, if you're a technician and you know you have to get calibration right and you're trying to figure out, okay, but I know I have to do temperature calibration. Where do I start? What do I do? The boxes itself are not going to do it. You have to have the knowledge. You have to have understanding. You have to have support. You have to have all sorts of things in place to make sure that everything fits into, you know, what's your uncertainties? What's your tolerances? What's your this? What's your, you know, how often should you calibrate? All sorts of questions that come into this big world of calibration that we're now going to talk about. So, yeah, it's very fundamental. Not only have boxes, but also have everything else in place. Like John said, the ecosystem.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of talking about context, aren't you? You're kind of talking about, okay, we want to calibrate a heat sensor, for instance. Well, that's okay. We kind of know what, you know, 1 degree and what 100 degrees. That's kind of just the sharp end, isn't it? It seems to me that for good calibration or whatever that means for a customer, it's context. And it's also paying close attention to, well, what metrics are you using? And of course, what the metrics then tell you is, well, what are you measuring that against? Are there standards? Are there, you know, compliance issues? So it seems to me that a lot of the conversations you guys must be having are not necessarily about the tech itself. It's kind of what wraps around that. It's context. It's looking at standards. It's ultimately, how do you do calibration as an integrated thing?
100%. And I would say that we're going to be talking about this, you know, in this episode about particular customer and their challenges. But what I want to say here is that pretty much everyone who comes to us has got similar problems, you know, and you may be thinking, oh, your problem as a company that needs to do calibration is somehow unique, but we've heard it all, you know, we've seen it all. And John, I'm sure can probably give you a bit more examples in terms of like different industries and companies that perhaps, you know, we did that for, but it's this idea that, yeah, you're producing widgets, yeah, and you need to get calibration right. Yeah, we have probably customers in that area. You burn in rubbish, you know, we have probably customers in your area. It's all about, how can we now put everything into context of your industry, your company? Let us share some knowledge that we have acquired over the years with you just to get you up to speed quicker.
Well, do you find that, John, when you're contacted by someone that needs help, are you hearing the kind of same thing over and over and over? Are there sort of common denominators? No matter what industry it is, they still need to collaborate X, Y, Z. Or are you finding that the way the industry is moving, that you're increasingly having to look at maybe bespoke solutions and solutions which are highly focused maybe on a process or highly focused on a particular industry? I'd be very interested to get a kind of picture of kind of where the industry kind of is when it comes to calibration.
Yeah, well, first of all, to reiterate what Mike has said, from a calibration point of view, it's a regulatory requirement. You have to get to be compliant to those standards. So whatever industry it is, from the high end of pharma, they're all important, but they're graded differently, I would say, in terms of prioritization of the calibration solution, so to speak. But, you know, BMX's purpose is to help provide the customer with a better way to calibrate the BMX. The ecosystem on there. And there are so many variants, not just in terms of regulatory requirements, it's also different processes that customers have today. Some customers are already having some kind of fully automated calibration process where the mixture can be standalone as well, where somebody just has a calibrator and things are documented manually, and then all of a sudden that starts the conversation. Okay, you're documenting the data, manually, this then creates an openness for human error. And if that human error is then repeated, what does this mean regarding the batch that you have? What does this mean regarding the accuracy, the reliability of the data, so on and so on? And this is a requirement across all industries. But I would say experience tells us that some are more stringent on it than others immediately. But they're basically the triggers for the discussion. Obviously, how the customer currently calibrates, what does operational excellence mean to them? You know, are they wanting, do they have a need to be more efficient? You know, since COVID, sustainability is the buzzword used.
Well, that's right. I think it's a fascinating subject because, I mean, do both of you see, I guess, the entire sort of calibration question? Is it a moving target or is it something that you guys can kind of pin down with product and service? Because it does seem to me that when we're trying to measure something, it's something tangible. So, you know, it's a temperature or a vibration or what quantity. You know, it's a known thing. But often do you feel businesses, they see calibrate as not as that, not as a finite. They see it as a kind of moving target, which they're trying to get a handle on.
I would say that 100% it's this idea of them moving with their own industry. So imagine that chemical plant is obviously moving in different pace than pharmaceuticals, that it's power and energy, that it's kind of, they all move in different directions slightly, but also different speed. I mean, we as BMX, we've been very active in pharmaceutical world for a while because of two reasons. One is the idea of, as John said, kind of highly regulated. In a sense, they have to get it right. They cannot, your 10 milligrams of particular drug that goes into a tablet, you know, pretty much has to be 10 milligrams, you know,
yeah,
it cannot be 11 or it cannot be 9, you know, it's kind of important that it's 10, you know, whereas obviously maybe if you burn rubbish, it doesn't really matter if you burn it at 701 or 699 Celsius degrees, you know, it's probably still going to burn quite easily. So it's, you know, if you start thinking about those criteria, yeah, they're obviously going to have different priorities. But I wanted to say about the sort of pharmaceutical world, for instance, you know, we do talk to our customers through, I think, John, is it like every year that we organize the pharma conference, the sort of meeting with our bigger pharma customers somewhere in Finland, usually, where we can actually go in and speak to them. What is their challenge? Where do they see their industry going?
Yeah.
I think it's once a year or something, is it, John?
Yeah, well, usually the face-to-face get-together is that, but it's a good point because it covers David's question there in terms of evolving industries and requirements and standards and regulations. It's a great opportunity for BMX to ask the customer, you know, what is happening in your industry? What is important? How you are supported today is excellent, but what do we need to know going forward? And those insights and information sharing on both sides is really of a great purpose to both sides. And I would say we've begun to expand that beyond pharmaceutical, and we've had the gas networks use things as well, which we'll touch on later. Yeah, that's one way of keeping up to date in terms of the evolving changes in technology and requirement of our customers.
Now, when I was thinking about this conversation last week, it seemed to me that one of the underlying aspects of calibration ultimately is data. Because ultimately, that's kind of what the sensor's collecting. And of course, the important stuff is how you make sense of the information that you're collecting. Now, from this point of view, and what I've seen in other industries, particularly in process, is, you know, the collection of data has exploded. And it's probably going to explode again as IoT and more sensor technology becomes readily available. I'm seeing a lot of 5G slicing going on inside process, this kind of stuff. But ultimately, you end up with massive amounts of data. So how do you guys approach that? You say, okay, we need to calibrate a process, for instance, you know, within, say, a factory or wherever it is. We're collecting massive amounts of data on that. How does calibration then kind of feed into that? Are you tapping into specific, you know, data sources? Are you analyzing massive amounts of data sets, or are you being more selective when you're looking at the information?
It's a good question. I think data is on everyone's mind these days. I think it started a few years ago when obviously big commercial organizations, the Amazons of this world and the Apples of this world, all of a sudden start to collect huge amount of data about us. And everyone in the industry thought, okay, maybe it's time for us to also not only have data, which they had obviously for a number of years with, as you said, every sensor gives you that. But now what do we do with them? And And today's topic, you know, the national gas, national grid case that we're going to be talking about, they are exactly the same, like majority of our customers, you know, big sites, massive, multiple sites in this case, you know, 5, 6, 10,000 instruments on site, that sort of database and calibrated every year, twice a year, five times a year, whatever it is. It's calibrated. It's now the data is there. What do we do with that data? It's always a huge kind of a challenge, huge task. But it's also start to think about those decision makers within those organizations and now need to follow that trend. Okay, we've got the data. What do we do with that? And you can imagine how difficult it must be for big organizations, for the national grid, national gas of this world, to then go into and say, okay, we've got this data, what do we do? How do we analyze? What do we employ? Do we have external companies coming in and looking at our data? Do we have our own teams looking at this? And we, as part of that small sort of data providers, which we are through calibration, now we have to help them with that. So we should say, and we are saying to everyone, okay, you shouldn't be thinking about calibration data because we as a provider not only give you the boxes, but also give you the software, the backend, the data, the way how you can look and analyze data, the reports, the history trends. We can give you all of that so you spend less time doing that. Because David, is in a lot of cases, it's all about the time. So how can we now have the data, analyze it, make some really good decisions on the back of that data in the shortest amount of time, you know, possible. So how can we now have this data accessible at our fingertips like this? And that's what we're trying to do with not only the boxes that we have that collect data, but then also what do we do at the back end? And I think that's a huge challenge for the just calibration industry overall, because, you know, we every now and again, we have these conversations with potential customers and they look at what we provide and what everyone else is doing. And they just see boxes that can measure temperature. And it's just so many layers beyond that. And I think if anyone is in this data game for a while, they would understand that the boxes can pretty measure accurately anything. But what happens on the other end with the ecosystem, with this stuff that is actually happening with the data, how the manager or the director or whoever else is in charge of that department or that site can make a decision about this transmitter, that model, the frequency, the uncertainties, the tolerances of particular tests. Well, they're going to have to look at the data, aren't they? So how are they going to get that data?
That's absolutely right. And I think that's quite a nice segue into, I guess, talking about, you know, our sort of case study. Because it's quite nice to be able to hang this stuff on something, I guess, real world, something tangible. You've already alluded to it a couple of times. That's, you know, National Gas. I think, you know, I think that's what they're now called. I think they were previously National Grid. I think we're now calling them National Gas, correct. I think that's correct.
Correct.
So all of the stuff that you've kind of just outlined, like, do you feel those were the key challenges for National Gas? They were trying to do a lot of that stuff. They had the sensor technology, but had massive amounts of data sets, but maybe a lack of understanding and insight. And how do you extract valuable information from that data set? It seems to me that's kind of what the call was. I mean, were they sort of coming to you to help them with that and also a lot of other elements as well?
Yeah, I think you perfectly nailed it on there, David, because I think it's exactly that. How do you extract the data? How do you interpret the data? How do you make sure that you make any sense of what you've been gathering over the years? And, you know, National Grid told us this so many times when we were speaking to them about this exercise, about doing this, about kind of working together, because they had to collect the data already for a number of years. And now all of a sudden, someone higher up there sat down and thought, hold on a second. We obviously have tens of thousands of data points across multiple sites over the years. Has anyone ever looked at them? Has anyone ever done anything with them? How are we doing with them?
Yeah, that's an interesting point as well, because it also occurred to me that we talk about calibration, sensor technology and data. And of course, initially we think, well, okay, that's what we're collecting today and tomorrow. But often do you get customers coming to you and say, well, that's fine, we can do that. But we have this massive amount of historical information, which surely must be useful, but we just can't analyze it.
Yeah, and it's start to think about this, David. You've got 72 folders in your office with all the data going back to 1991. You would never, ever, ever, never, ever, ever, ever look at that data ever again. It's impossible because you cannot analyze an analog data. You cannot go back now to a piece of paper from 91 trying to make sense out of it. But imagine for a split second if that was computerized system. Imagine that data was already digital and you can few clicks and it actually shows you history trend of the particular transmitter over 26 years. It is such a no-brainer that you start thinking, okay, hold on a second. Why are not everyone doing this? And there is obviously challenges and there is a variety of reasons why not everyone is still doing this. And we can talk about those. But I would say that the key to understand calibration, it's not about those boxes that measure data because they're just going to guess as accurate as they're going to be. You know, we are the most accurate, but the guy next to us is as accurate as we are. Not as accurate, but very close. So that boxes, those boxes that measure things, they're only going to get as accurate as they can be. But is the data, what are we doing with that afterwards, is the absolute key. And I think the sooner your listeners, our viewers, whoever's going to be looking at this and listening to this, understand that what they're doing with that data matters. And we as company, we as BMX, actually focusing on that, how you can analyze it, how you can make sense of it, how you can now make decision based on your historical data is absolutely key. As soon as someone understands this, they're going to be...
I think that's fascinating. I mean, for you, John, when some National Grid approached you, if you were obviously part of those early conversations, was that kind of it? Were they focusing on the data side? Or was it a group of things they wanted to do? Were they looking at hardware, software? Were they looking at infrastructure? Yeah, was it the case that they wanted to kind of make improvements? They knew they had to do something. But was it going to be a case of an incremental change? Or really was it going to be root and branch based on the, you know, the infrastructure that they got?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one with National Grid. A really exciting journey on both sides.
It's a journey, wasn't it? Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. I think if you peel it back, obviously the end goal was a centralized database and a database of rich data coming through from an asset performance point of view. But to start off with, like I said, if you peel it back, we had plenty of footprint with National Grid in terms of hardware and looking at calibration data, but that was all. And then these things, obviously timing as well, there has to be a need, a requirement. I think every customer we have wants to be richer in data and wants to be more compliant, et cetera, and save time, save money, be more efficient. But there has to be a movement, I think, within the businesses of the need. And I think what also helped with National Gas, as they are now known, is they're regulated as a company as well.
And absolutely.
They demonstrate, you know, ways forward with innovation, and how they're going to be more sustainable, et cetera, and provide better, cleaner energy and all of this. So that was definitely on the radar. And I think because of these islands of data that they did have, it made it very difficult to monitor and accurately assess the actual asset performance in terms of what they have. Obviously, multiple compressor stations across sites, across the UK, no standardized calibration procedure, each site doing it individually, each person doing it their own way in that. But then with the option of looking at a centralized and standardized solution for gathering, recording, storing this data, that was the end goal. And it was how do we achieve that? And I think this commonality of operations and IT and the business being aligned to see the value of this is helped to push this through. So you do need that business coherence at different levels to push this large project through, but you've touched on some great points already.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the solution itself then. If you could give us a sort of outline, Mike, ultimately, what did the solution look like? Did it have several components? Were you putting in place a single solution, or was it a case of you had to look at various aspects of their business and then create a sort of bespoke solution for them?
Mm-hmm. I mean, National Grid is just an interesting customer from a variety of different perspectives. You know, as John was saying before, 25, I think, compressor stations, somewhere around this number in the UK, where they kind of act as just local hubs, obviously, for pushing the gas further down the grid. And what's interesting, and I think even the guys at National Grid were saying, they had to deal with their own local waste of doing things that were already in place. So even if the technicians were moving from one side to the other, they had to adapt to the local ways. And that was a challenge, I would say, number one. And, if you start thinking, okay, if that's a challenge, what actually is the solution to that is obviously some sort of centralized system, centralized way of doing it, not only using the hardware, but also using the software. So to answer your question, David, about kind of what is the solution, it has got a few components. It definitely has got the box that measures, you know, something that can gives you a very accurate data, the most accurate portable data that is out there. Okay, so tick that box, brilliant. Then, okay, we talked about the data itself. Where does that go? Where is that stored? Well, there is solutions for that. There is a thing called CMX software. That's an installation. It could be installed in the cloud. It could be centralized systems. And that's exactly what National Grid has. There is other solutions, maybe a smaller, maybe more portable, like things like Logical. It's also a software. So now you've got a hardware, you've got a software. And the last third component that is missing is the expertise. And I think we also were chatting about this at the very beginning, is this idea of having enough experts in the company that you buy the solution from, so they can take you literally by hand and move you from by step to step. Okay, let's have a workshop. After the workshop, let's have a data. This is how we can gather data. Have you got a data already stored somewhere in Excel? Okay, give us that data. Okay, this is how we're going to build your database. Okay, now the next step. Okay, let's trial for the small run. Maybe do 10, 20 calibrations. See how you get on. Okay, we provided training. Okay, the next step is then, okay, roll out to the, you know, have a rollout date. Roll that out across multiple sites if you have. So that expertise, that it's not only the box, it's not only the software, buy a software, install it, and, you know, see ya. None of that. It's holding your hand from the very beginning, you know, even to the point where we actually sit down with you and say, okay, show me what you do. Like, how many pressure calibrations do you do? What's the temperature range? What's the pressure range? Okay, so maybe you need two of those. You need two of that. Maybe you need that as well. And don't forget that you need some training. You need some validations. Whatever that is, we are there from the very beginning to design the system for you. Because what we found, David, as well, is a lot of customers, including National Grid, it's not as if they want to have the cheapest solution. It's not about the price. So if you think about for a second that we push the price to one side, it is the solution that they want. It is the working solution. So they want to have less headache, not more headaches. So if we not only provide the box, the software, and the entire onboarding process, what we call it, they are willing to pay whatever that's worth. The money side of things, because your viewers, your listeners may be thinking, ah, bloody hell, how much does that cost? It is a secondary conversation, because maybe the conversation is about where you are, where you want to be, and how much is that worth to you. And I think in that case story as well, I think Jane Jepson was given real tangible numbers, because for them to be able to kind of, you know, push the solution across so many compressor sites, they had to come up with some really good business case. And they did. And I think if you were, I think we're going to link that to the case story in show notes somewhere, I'm
yes,
pretty sure.
But you can,
yeah, but you can read in there as well that they save 15 minutes per calibration. 15. That doesn't sound like a lot. But imagine thousands of calibrations every year, tens of thousands. You know, you're looking at some really massive savings. And that's, as soon as you put that business case forward, you kind of think, you know, that solution's going to pay for itself in a year or so, you know. And all of a sudden, it's no longer about money. That's what I said, the conversation has to be about where you want to be, where you are. Can we help you to move you from the dark ages into the digital solution? And if you want that, yeah, we're here for you, you know.
Well, I'm sure John has conversations about money, absolutely. I'm sure that's an absolute...
It's important to have, you know, it's important conversations to have.
Sure he does. But from your point of view, John, when you're talking to your customer base, is that kind of what it is these days? It isn't, we don't just want to buy a solution off the shelf and bolt it on, happy days. That's kind of not where the industry wants to move to. We want to really partner with people that have, they want to become partners for us, partners in moving us towards our end goal and helping us to define, importantly, what that end goal is.
Yeah, the National Gas example we're talking about today is different maybe from the day-to-day that we deal with because of their not only the size of the company, but the project and the journey that I've mentioned already. And there's a number of things to cover here. I'll try and give a short answer, but I think as Mike's already touched on it, when you look at the company that BMX is, you know, we want to be the best calibration technology partner for our customers. We want to help them have a better way to calibrate, etc., our values as a company, open, precise, etc. And a lot of companies, I think, want to achieve the same common goal, but with the size of National Gas, to take stock of what is the, or what was the as is and to be, to have, again, alignment of people on the operational side, the IT side, the business need, and then the regulatory requirements. You know, each one was a phase to get them on board. So the hardware with the compressor station sites got the operational team on board. They saw the value of the early, it's going to save us 50% of our time. It's going to save us costs. It's going to save us man hours. When you do that per week, per month, per year, per site, that then starts to gather interest with management. Mm-hmm. Management see that the business in a different light as well. So to coordinate this business need, this business interest, on top of then getting IT involved and looking at this rich data lake of asset optimization, data coming through to have true visibility of all of their assets in the UK, not missing data per site, to then have this centralized and coming through and having this one-page view of all of their asset integrity was also a real benefit. So these were the main, probably say, four core stages of qualification. And cost very rarely is mentioned at the beginning of these discussions, because it really is about this end goal solution that's not only for today, but is sustainable for many years to come. And it was a working partnership.
I like the phrase that our Finnish colleagues use, and I'm going to quote this, and I think it's brilliant. I think in order for us to start kind of a partnership with any company that produce something that is in process, instrumentation, and need our help, we have to kind of call their baby ugly. And I quote this exact words from our Finnish colleagues, because it's about that. We have to come in and say, okay, you know, your systems that you're using is a bit outdated. Your baby is ugly, but we're going to make it nice. We're going to make it pretty. But it's going to take time. It's not something that you can expect, can throw some money at this and be like, okay, just fix it for us. It is work in partnership. What John was saying about the IT being involved, there is commitments, there is stakeholders in this. Everyone needs to be satisfied with a variety of different levels of this. And in the National Grid case story, we also talk about this idea of us coming together with some project managers, with the IT managers, with certain people, not only in the high management, but sort of middle management, maybe that are responsible for each site individually, to come to table and say, okay, yeah, our baby is a bit, we can make it prettier, you know, let's work on this together. So I think it's very important to say that it takes time. I don't know how long it took, John, but it was a long process, because of, imagine how many people involved, you know, everyone wants to kind of see if that's going to benefit them. Is it the solution they were looking for? They want to test, they want to try, they want to do all sorts of things. So of course it takes time, but we are there for the process. You know, we're there to help you at each individual step and guide you through that. That's why we're different. That's why we are the technology partner, more than just another seller of another box.
And that's a differentiator between BMEX and competitors out there. It is a solution. It is the ecosystem of the calibrator, the temperature block, the calibration workbench, the software, all of that calibration ecosystem. That is a differentiator. But just another quick comment on getting that kind of pull, that hook, that lure. You know, it's in the case story, a couple from James Jepsen and Andy Barnwell. But a big attraction was to sell, and this is to sell this internally. You know, we have the discussions with the customer, and they will have their own discussions afterwards, but that ability to thoroughly interrogate their assets and then make informed decisions about maintenance procedures and schedules, that was visibility of data like never before. That was, from our point of view, a real driver. And then it grows from that. It's visibility of data to standardization, a centralized calibration system to, you know, trusted partner.
Yeah, because ultimately, well, you just use the word. I just wrote trust on my pad here. And that's kind of what it is, isn't it? It's, can we trust the information that we are collecting? And ultimately, can we then trust the information that we are analyzing? And then give us a single source of truth, which we can then use to influence our process or influence our business. And ultimately, that's what National Grid were kind of looking for, it seems to me, was that kind of trust in the sensor technology, but then trust in the analytics, which was going on top of all of that, because they were going to use that information to move their business forward.
Absolutely. And absolutely. I think to also add to this trusted partner, you know, we value ourselves as being the trusted advisors, as a calibration specialty, shall we say. And through this kind of consultancy approach with them, it's not just about today, it's about 5, 10, 15, 20 years in front. And okay, these projects don't come up all of the time, but when they do, and again, and things are aligned, there's a real need for both sides, for the collaboration on both sides to move this forward. And I have to say, great credit to National Gas as well for their input on this, for their desire and need to move this forward, because you do need that coordination and togetherness. So it's not just about the excellent technology that BMEX have. It's so much more.
Anything you guys want to cover that we haven't?
I would say that from my part is that we as BMEX, we try to not only the boxes, the software, the solutions, you know, talk about all of this, but we also here to educate. So if you are at the very early stages of even considering, looking at solutions, maybe you know that something within your organization has to change when it comes to calibration. There are so many resources that we're putting out there. Not only our blog that is written by a phenomenal guy from Finland, a guy called Heikki. He's been with us for 20 years plus. He's amazing. He really writes good blogs about what really matters. You know, how do you calibrate temperature sensors? Why do we calibrate pressure gauges? You know, all sorts of things like that. Really good, valuable resource. That's a blog. I'm sure we can link to that. There is some YouTube videos as well. Again, education more than just look at our beautiful shiny solution. So it's how do you calibrate easily heart transmitter if you are trying to do pressure? How do you calibrate a switch and things like that? So please go and check it out, because it maybe just because you're going to see something out there, it's going to spark enough interest and spark enough enthusiasm within your department, within your managers and whoever is going to be making that decision, to then start that conversation. How can we move from a system that you already currently have to something that is maybe more digitalized, that is working, that gives you the proper analytics, etc.? And we also have, John, once a year, would you say, we have a Cal Day here in the UK? So again, if you're interested to see us face to face, you're more than welcome to dose. I think it's once a year, John.
Yeah, it is. The Calibration Awareness and Learning Day. We can share some links for that. I think it's important to say today we've only given a snippet of BMEX as a company, the calibration solution we can provide. I'm sure we've touched on a number of points that are very relative, but we can expand on that, but we will have more of these podcasts to share. But as Mike says, there's a lot of information available. The training side of what we offer, very valuable. I think this also helps to create that kind of awareness and standardization, especially when engineers move between sites as well. That's really helpful to the course also on there. So more to come, but thank you for today.
Awesome. Well, absolutely, yes. Well, everyone, I think we've probably come to the end of this one. Amazing, we've run out of time. I thought it was a fascinating conversation. Some real insights into, I guess, what calibration means today, how it's central to a lot of process, and of course, what that means about data and analytics. And really, it's about a kind of ecosystem these days, placing all of those things into context. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. Yeah, for more information about BMEX, its products and solutions, please do visit their website at www.bmex.com. Well, until the next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's also goodbye from Mike.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And it's goodbye from John.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, and tune in soon for another PII podcast. Or visit PIIMag.com to subscribe to our bi-monthly magazine or weekly newsletter and read the latest news from the industry.